Well, I got to see all you people out here. This is unbelievable to be up here. I never been so nervous in my life as I am tonight. Whew. I've been up here once before, I believe. Pardon? I told you I was nervous. My name is Wally, and I am an alcoholic. Oh! And I could see I am in for one hell of a night. I can see that. I can see that right now. Me and Sue. We had so much fun about this Sue coming up here. It was really pitiful. Well, let me get into something we're all here for, and that's alcoholism. I started drinking I was about 15 years old, back in a little coal town in Pittston, Pennsylvania. How I started drinking, back in Pennsylvania, we have these great big weddings in church halls, just like we have here, this big, great big hall up in the front. And we didn't have these great big weddings back there in them days. They had these great big hall, and they used to set all the booze and the sandwiches and the cake in these big halls on tables. And you went into these wedding receptions and had a good time for yourself. How I started drinking, every Saturday night, we used to look into the newspaper and find out where the closest wedding reception was. You didn't have to know the people. You just had to know where the wedding was. I was only about 14 or 15 years old. There was about four of us, so we used to always go to a wedding almost every Saturday night. I've been to Italian weddings, I've been to Jewish weddings, I've been to Polish weddings, I've been to all kind of weddings. And one little thing I got hooked on was a little drink called anisette, and that was at Italian weddings. I used to drink this anisette like it was water. And from the first drink that I ever drank, I got sick to my stomach and I puked. From there on, I should have quit drinking right there and then. I went to many, many weddings after that one, and I got sick many, many times. And you heard Bruce introduce me as Puking Wally. Well, that's what I am known up in New York as, Puking Wally, and I'll tell you something about that a little bit later on. During the Korean War, most of my friends were older guys. A lot of them got drafted. And I wanted to join the Army, so I was about 17 years old at the time. And I begged my mother and father to let me join the Army. And after pleading, crying, and arguing with them, they let me join the Army. Well, I went to one more last wedding back there in Pittston, Pennsylvania, and it was a Polish wedding. And this wedding went for 2 days. And when I got on that train to go to this camp that I had to report to, I was one sick puppy, let me tell you. And we went on a train, and I was never on a train in my life. And that train was bouncing up and all, bouncing up, you know, and I was sick and my head was pounding, and I had puked all over the floor. Well, I get into this Fort Meade, Maryland, and from there on, I'm going to these PXs. I was only 17 years old, and you could drink in these things. They called 3-2-point beer. They said it couldn't make you drunk or whatever, but that was a damn lie. I got just as drunk drinking that stuff as anything else. And I went to Fort Linwood, Missouri, and took my basic training there. And I was just about 18 years old when I finished basic training. And they had decided that they wanted to ship me to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. Well, right after Camp Kilmer, right when I got down to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey, they decided that somebody in Congress wanted to close Camp Kilmer, and they had no place to send a poor bum like me. So they didn't know what to do with me, so they figured they were going to send me to West Point, the United States Military Academy. Through this time, I've been working in restaurants all my life before I even came into the Army, and while I was a young kid back in Pennsylvania, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that a little later on also. When I came to West Point, I got right into the mess hall up there. As a young cook, they sent me through cook school while I was up at Fort Leonardville, Missouri, cook and bakery school and this and that. Well, I was only, like I say, just about hitting 18 years old at the time. And in New York State at that time, you had to be 18 years old to drink. Well, I thought this was really, really great, that I could go and sit in the bar and drink at 18 years old. I thought this was fabulous to go into a town. But right outside of West Point, there was a tavern called the Southgate Tavern. And I went in there, and I didn't know nothing about the bar or the people that was in there. And they were mostly old-timers, and again, I was only 18 years old. Now, I never drank any hard stuff, any whiskey in my life. The hardest thing I ever drank, I told you, was anisette. I drank a lot of beer. I drank a lot of beer. I never drank really any whiskey. But I walked into this Southgate Tavern, and all these old-timers were sitting there, and they're drinking these little shots of Seagram's with a little tiny glass of beer as a chaser. So I went in and sat there like a big dude, you know, real big man there. And bartender asked me, what's your pleasure? I said, well, give me one of them. Well, I took that little Seagram 7 there, or Seagram's, whatever it was, and put it down, and I puked all over the guy's bar. Boy, it hit my stomach, and it was just like a volcano erupted, and I puked all over this guy's bar. And this guy looked at me. He said, what's the matter with you? I said, nothing. He says, you drunk? I said, no, it's the first drink I had. I said, no. So he got the rag, you know, and he wiped the bar all up and squirted the thing all over, you know. And I had a couple more drinks and this and that and this and that. Well, by the time I left the Southgate Tavern, I puked on the guy's bar 4 times. And the guy told me he'd rather me not come in there anymore. So this was my starting point from West Point, the Southgate Tavern. This was my starting point. And being an Army town right outside of West Point, that's all it is bars. There's nothing else in Highland Falls except bars. Well, I would hit all these bars all the way down the road, right down to the end of the Highland Falls, which is only about a mile long. And all these bartenders didn't like to see me coming. Because again, no matter what bar I went into, I always got sick. I always got sick. I was one sick dog. I was sick all the time. I should have quit drinking a long, long time ago. Because God, I don't know how I ever put up with it until I come into this program. I don't know how I ever done it. Oh, it was pathetic. It was pathetic. I was sick all the time. You know, when I got into this program and got sober, my God, I thought it was a new life. I didn't know what was going on, not to be sick no more, you know? In fact, I was sober a long time, and when I got sick and threw up, I was clapping. I was so happy to know I could still do this, you know? It was unbelievable. But anyway, like I say, I used to work my way down through the end of Highland Falls and drink and have a good old time and get drunk. At one time, I was in the bar, and I knew these other guys from another outfit. And it was just about quitting time in the West Point Inn, I believe it was. It was just about quitting time in the bar, and they were closing up. So the guys asked me, did I want to ride back, you know, to my barracks? And I told them no, I was going to get a six-pack of beer and go up to the middle of town and sit on a bench and drink my beer and go back to West Point. Well, one word led to another, and they said they were going back to West Point. We'll give you a ride. I says, okay. So I went out, and I got into the back seat of the car, and these guys, there was three other guys from another outfit. I didn't hardly know the guys, but I played baseball against them on West Point. And they had the intentions of rolling this one old-timer that was in the West Point bar. Now, I didn't know this at the time, so I went out and I got into the car, and they come out, two guys, and another guy brought this old timer out and put him into the back seat of the car where I was, and the other guy, you know, got in the back with me and the old timer, and the other two guys got in the front. Well, instead of hitting, you know, going to West Point, they turned around and went down towards Fort Montgomery, another little town outside of Highland Falls, where the Highland Falls dump was. Well, yeah, so where are you guys going? They said, oh, we're going to this spot down at the river. It's an all-night spot. So naturally, being a drunk and love to booze, I was all for it. But again, I say they had intentions of rolling this guy, so what they did is they pulled off and went up to this Highland Falls dump. And just as they went up there and they stopped the car, you know, and the one guy in the back seat just hit this guy on the side of the face. And the guy was about 65 years old. And they really beat this guy unmerciful, unmerciful. I said, what are you guys doing? What the hell is going on here? So one thing led to another, and all through this, all I remember is when they took the guy outside, I finally got out of the car, and I got the guy, and I put him, like I put his head on my shoulder here, and I put my arm around him, and I got him back into the car. And I told these guys, I says, okay, now that's enough. Let's get this guy and bring him to a hospital or something like this. Well, they wanted to take this guy and throw him in a lake outside of Bear Mountain. And if they'd done that, sure as hell, this guy would have drowned. I know that. But anyway, I talked him into bringing this guy and bringing him back to Highland Falls and putting him in front of the police station in Highland Falls. So they did listen to me, and they took the guy and we dropped him off in front of the police station in Highland Falls, and they brought me up to my barracks on West Point, and they went to their barracks also on West Point. It was a different company. Well, the next morning, I hear the first sergeant yelling over a box that we had in the back room, and I had a private room because I was a cook, you know, in the outfit. And I heard him saying, Reddington, get your you-know-what down into my office. Well, I just put a pair of old pants on, and I went down to the first sergeant's office, and like you see me here right now, there was a door behind the first sergeant's desk going into the commanding officer's office, and there was these two big state police guys behind there that I didn't notice at the time. So the first sergeant says, Reddington, where were you last night? I says, bah, 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 you know, I was over here, Sergeant, this and that, and I got picked up with these guys down Highland Falls, and they were going to give me a ride back, and they picked up this guy, and, you know, they rolled the guy and whatever and took the guy's money, and, you know, I stopped them from doing this and brought the guy back to Highland Falls and let him off in front of the police station. But see, the shirt I had on when I went down to the first sergeant's office was all blood from where I held this guy on his shoulder. And I was all blood. But I told the first sergeant exactly what had happened and, you know, the whole story. In the meantime, the door opens up behind the first sergeant's desk and these two big state policemen walk out and he says, now, is that exactly what happened? And I looked over, I said, yeah. I said, that's exactly what happened. They said, well, I'll tell you, Reddington, you better get some clothes on because we got to take you up to the state police barracks in Newburgh, New York for questioning. I says, okay. So I went upstairs and I got my Class A uniform on and I went up to the state police barracks in Newburgh, New York with these two state policemen. Anyway, this guy was questioning me, a big, big old sergeant up there, you know, about everything that went on, and I signed a statement that this is exactly what happened. Then the one guy comes out and says, okay, book him. Well, they come over and they slap handcuffs on me, and they take me to the Orange County Jail. I said, well, you know, what's the story here? Why are you taking me to the jail? Well, I was being held for assault, robbery, and grand larceny. And again, I was only an 18-year-old kid, and I didn't even know what was going on. Well, anyway, I sat in this Orange County Jail for 6 months. And here I was in the Army at West Point. And while I was in this jail down there in Goshen, New York, all these professional convicts that are in there, you know, they all know what you're going to get when you go to trial and all this. Well, I was, excuse me, I was scared to death in this jail. I was really scared to death. I didn't know what was going to happen to me. And after they says, once you're tried in this civil court, then when you get back to West Point and the federal people are going to have, you're probably going to end up in a stockade and stuff like that there. So again, my head is all filled. I don't know what's going on. I don't even know what I'm doing in this jail because I never had no intentions of, you know, robbing this guy or rolling the guy. But I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And these guys went to trial. Two of them I know went to prison. I don't know to this day what happened to the third one. And I had to go into the judge's chambers, not even knowing today what the judge even told me. I don't know. And he told me that the MPs from West Point was coming down to pick you up and you were going back to West Point. Well, when they came down and got me to take me back to West Point, these two MPs, I knew one of them because I played baseball on West Point a lot, and I knew one of the guys, I played ball against him. He said, "Wally, is there anything we can do for you, you know, before we can back to West Point?" I said, "Sure, I'd love to just have a cup of coffee, you know, just a cup of coffee in a restaurant." So they stopped and we had a cup of coffee. And they took me back to West Point. Now, I have intentions that I'm going to the stockade, that I'm going to jail, going to an Army prison now, see, because of being convicted of assault, robbery, and grand larceny. Well, these MPs take me to West Point and drop me right off in front of my barracks. They said, Okay, Wally, you can go on in." I says, "Well, what's going on?" He says, "Nothing. We were told our orders was to bring you here to West Point. You go on into your barracks." Well, I go into the barracks, you know, I'm still not knowing what was going on. And in the meantime, being in jail in Goshen for 6 months for something I didn't do, I had got a new commanding officer. So naturally, I walk into the first sergeant's office, and he brings me into the commanding officer's office, and we talked. He says, "Wally," he says, "I know you've had a bad experience through all this and that and these and those," he says, "but you're not going to be punished here in the federal service. You're not going to be court-martialed." He says, "The only thing that you're going to have to do in the Army is make up what you call 302 lost days while you were sitting in the Goshen jail." He says, "That's the only thing you're going to have to do." In other words, when my discharge day came in August of 56 or whenever, I had to stay 302 more days before I got my discharge. So thank God I got out of that mess. And it was some mess to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, but that was all through alcoholism, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I get back into work, into the outfit. A fella had gone AWOL. That's, some of you don't know what that is. It's absent without leave. And this guy was a corporal. I was a PFC when I went in the Army, right after basic training, and I had got one stripe. This guy had gone AWOL, and they busted this guy from a corporal, and they gave me his stripe. That made me the first cook on the shift in our mess hall. Now, all the time I was in Goshen jail, I always said, "I'll never drink again." Well, you know, we all said that. We always say that because we couldn't drink. We were behind bars, at least I was. So naturally, I always said to myself, "I'll never have another drink as long as I live." But after I get out of the jail and I start feeling sorry for myself, and here I just get a promotion now, I'm a corporal in the Army and I'm in charge of the first shift, I'm only 19 years old now, you know, everything is working pretty good, you know. So again, the first bar I hit when I got outside the gate was the Southgate Tavern. Southgate Tavern. And I didn't puke on the guy's bar. I puked on his floor, but I didn't puke on his bar. I knew I was getting sick because I hadn't had a drink now in a long time, like 6 months or so. And I tried to run to the bathroom in time, but I didn't make it. And I puked all over the guy's floor, you know. And had a few more drinks after that and went in the bathroom and put my finger down my throat so I can puke some more so I could drink some more. You know, I was really, really out of it. I was really crazy at this stage of the game. And one night I had gone downtown, and I was drinking all day long. And I had gone back to the barracks, and then that night I went back downtown. And I was sick as a dog. And I had to open up the mess hall at 4 o'clock in the morning. That was my job, to get in the mess hall and get all the steam tables lit up, the grill lit up, and all that stuff. Well, I was sick as a dog about 3:45 that morning, and I get back to West Point, and I get the keys from the first sergeant's office and go up there, and I open up the mess hall, and I was sick as a dog. Now, in the old days, we had what they call fat back. It ain't what they have, this oil that you put on the grill now and wipe. It was just big, big piece of old fat bacon that used to rub the grill, you know. Well, I went in the kitchen, you know, and I turned on all the steam pots and got the coffee going and all this stuff and getting everything ready to go. And I had turned the grill up real high, up on high. It had four jets. And I turned every one of them up on high. Well, I forgot to turn them back down, you know, as I was going around the kitchen and everything. This grill was like practically red hot. It was just like fire. And I got this piece of bacon fat, you see, and I rubbed it right over the top of the grill. And the fumes from this bacon got into my nose a little bit, you know. And I didn't back up from the grill fast enough, and I had puked all over this grill. Now here the grill is all on, you know, all, the smoke is going all over, and it was really unbelievable. It was a mess. Now I didn't have much time to clean this grill up because the troops were coming in, you see. So there were some old rags laying there. We had a great big old pot with rags there, and I just got them, you know, washed the puke off the grill a little bit, and I said, "Oh hell, that's good enough, you know, good enough." Well, the troops came in, I guess, about 5 o'clock, and they had their breakfast and all, and I don't know how it tasted, but I'm glad I wasn't one of them that ate it. But this was just one of the things I did while I was in the Army. One afternoon, I was going downtown in Highland Falls, and I met this girl down Highland Falls. And I ran across the street and asked her, would she want to go out on a date with me and this and that. Well, she heard about the bad reputation that I had about beating this old man up, this assault, robbery, and grand larceny and all that stuff. And I says, you know, I says, that wasn't me. I said, I didn't do that. I never laid a hand on this man as far as I'm concerned. I saved a man's life. I didn't do this. But I actually believed I did this until a later date in my life, that I actually did do this, because I thought that's what I was in jail for. But one thing led to another, and finally I kept after this girl day and night to go out on a date with me, and she finally did. And I took her to one of these bars after a movie in Highland Falls, and naturally again, I got drunk, and naturally I puked like I always did, you know. And I woke up the next morning, and she was gone, naturally, and I was in the barracks, and most of my drinking career was blackouts. Most of my drinking career was blackouts. There was times that I couldn't remember ever leaving Highland Falls, and I would wake up in Massachusetts, I would wake up upstate New York, I would wake up in Pennsylvania, and I wouldn't even remember leaving Highland Falls, and I'd wake up in these kind of places, you know. But this girl was a senior in high school, you know, and I called her up on the phone after that, and she told me, you know, you're a bum and this and that and these and those. And finally, I told her, you know, her mother had died when she was only a young girl of 12 years old, and she was living with her sister. Her and her father was living with her sister. And I only knew the girl, oh, maybe a week or two. And I told her, I said, you should marry me because I'm going to set you up for life. I'm a corporal in the Army making $99 a month. I'm going to take care of you. She says, I think you're crazy. She says, something's wrong with you. I said, well, you have no future. You're graduating high school here now next month and this and that. I says, you have, you know, you might as well marry me. I says, I'm a corporal in the Army. I said, I'm going to really set you up and take you places. Well, after high school, I talked this girl into marrying me. The day I married her, I was a sick dog. I was drunk. I almost missed a wedding. I was so drunk and sick. After I got out of the Army, we went back to Pennsylvania for a while. And when my son was born back there, I was drunk most of the time. And I didn't get to the hospital to see my son for about 2 days after he was born. I was drunk all the time. She left me a few times back in Pennsylvania and came back to New York. And I came back to New York one time and I got her and talked to her and asked her to come back to Pennsylvania with me. And I says, things will change. Well, she did. She came back. But things did not change. Things just got worse, and I drank more and got into just a lot more problems, a lot more trouble. She said, well, maybe if we move back to New York, we could rent a little place here in New York and you find a job and everything else will be fine. I says, okay. I brought her back to her sisters from Pennsylvania up here to New York, and I went back home, and I stayed back in Pennsylvania taking care of the business back there and getting taken care of everything. All this high-class furniture I had, these, you know, three-leg tables. You had books under one leg to hold the lamp up and all this stuff, the high-class furniture I had. Never had nothing, couldn't afford nothing. All I could do was drink. I stayed back in Pennsylvania by myself and drank and got drunk and got sick as usual. And I rented a great big 5-ton U-driver truck and packed everything I owned from Pennsylvania to this truck and drove it all the way from Pennsylvania all the way to Highland Falls, New York, and I never remember leaving Pennsylvania in a great big 5-ton truck. I don't even remember leaving Pennsylvania. And I got up here. While I was here in the Army, I had met an executive chef over the Hotel Thayer, and I figured I would go and talk to this guy and see if he'd give me a job. Well, he gave me a job. About a year after he gave me a job as a cook in the Hotel Thayer, the chief steward had a heart attack and he died. And the chef called me in his office and said, "Wally," he says, "I got a good deal for you if you think you can handle it." He says, "I'd like you to try to take over this chief steward's job at this kitchen." I said, "Well, I'd sure like to give it a try, chef." So he trusted me and gave me the job as the chief steward in the kitchen. Things went on pretty good, but I had the wrong keys for the wrong places, the liquor vault. That was the wrong key to give me. And I stole everything out of that liquor vault and drank everything day and night I was drinking there. And there was days I went in there, I don't even remember going to work and don't even remember coming home. Drunk all the time, drunk every day of my life, sick every day of my life. The manager fired me from the Hotel Thayer through drinking. I got to know another guy down at the Bear Mountain Inn. I went down and see him, and he gave me a job as a cook in that kitchen. In the meantime, I heard about jobs opening back up at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. So I went back up to the civilian personnel office, and I put an application in to get a cook's position back on West Point, where I was when I was in the Army. And I got called back to West Point about 2 weeks after that, and I got to be a cook in the old days in the cadet mess, where we fed the cadets that was at the U.S. Military Academy. And I worked in there for quite a few years and got drunk and got sick and got into a lot of trouble. In the meantime, my wife got pregnant again and I had a little daughter. And at the time, I was drinking real heavy. At the time, I didn't even know what day it was half of the time. And I didn't get up to see my daughter for about 3 days after she was born. We lived in a little house that I rented for $50 a month back in Highland Falls. It was my wife, myself, my son, and my daughter in this little tiny house. We didn't have hardly any room, hardly any furniture, hardly anything, because I drank it up as fast as I got it. Things went on fairly good. I was doing all right, but the drinking just got worse and worse and worse. And in my drinking career, I bought this car. I had wrecked it and lost it. I bought another car. I'd wrecked it and I lost it. And then there was a third car. I bought it, I wrecked it, and I lost it. I was paying for three cars, and I was walking in Highland Falls. The payments through these three cars was a total of $200-some that I was paying. My wife told me, she says, "I think there might have been four cars, but I don't really remember. But I was paying for three cars and walking the side streets of Highland Falls." I went home one night after drinking and raising all kinds of hell in Highland Falls. At the time, the cops didn't even want to see me coming to Highland Falls because at this time I was a crazy man. I was a nut. And I had gone and out and I was drinking all day long. And I went home for some reason. And I walked into the living room and I sat on the sofa. And I asked my wife, I said, "What are you watching?" She says, "Ben Casey." You know, this guy, doctor, he's supposed to know everything. He knew everything about everything, and I didn't know nothing. I hated this guy's guts. I says, well, I don't want you to watch Ben Casey. I want to watch so-and-so. I didn't even know what was on TV. And I had just bought this TV, what they call a swivel box. It was on a swivel. You could put it in the corner and you could, you know, swivel it around. And I sat on the sofa and I told her to change that because I was just arguing with her so I could go back out where, you know, I'd get into a big fight and argument with her. Well, I literally went crazy. And I had picked up the coffee table that was sitting in front of this sofa that just had bought this TV, $369, and picked this coffee table up and threw it through the television. And I had woke up the next morning laying on this couch. I had puked all over the place, all over myself, all over the sofa, all over the couch, all over the floor. And I'm laying on the couch, and I'm looking up in the wall, and a table, one of the end tables, was stuck up in there in the wall. And I couldn't pick my head up because I was sick. You know, it was pounding really, really bad. I just couldn't pick my head up. And I'm yelling to my wife, Charlotte, Charlotte, what the hell went on in here? What's going on? The TV was broke. The glass was all over. The drapes were pulled down. The lamps was, you know, the door was half off its hinges. I mean, the place was like a bomb had struck it. And I don't remember doing any of this stuff. I don't remember doing any of this stuff till this day. So I figured she had to run down to her sisters or something. Something's going on, and I just don't know what the hell is happening here. She took the two kids, and she claimed that I tried to strangle her in the kitchen or something like this, and I don't remember nothing like this. And I went down to her sister's house and talked to her to come back and this and that, and maybe 3 days later she finally came back, and you know, and I told her I would be good and I would try to, you know, make amends and all this kind of stuff. You hear me say make amends? That's a big word I learned since I come into the program, make amends. The words I used to know in them days is just couldn't even say over the microphone because I was some piece of work, let me tell you. And again, I talked her into coming back. And things went on pretty good on the job. And we start getting along very well. Except one day I was sitting out on the front step of this little house that we rented and talking to myself. Asking, you know, saying, why can't I own a nice little house like Don Archibald across the street? And I'm talking to myself. My wife's in the living room. The screen door is open. She said, because you damn fool, you'll never own nothing. She said, you just look in the corner of that porch. And I looked over there in the corner, and there was a couple hundred cans of Rheingold beer, bottles of anisette, bottles of other kind of wine, whatever, all empty. I had drank everything that was there. There was nothing in them but empty cans and bottles. And she says, that's why you'll never have anything. It's all I ever did was drink. That's all I ever knew how to drink. That's all I ever knew how to do was drink. A job came open at the Keller Army Hospital as the head chef. I'm going to go towards the end of this because I could be up here till next year. I'd be still here going to some of the things I did. But I want to just clear some things up before I finish here tonight. The head chef came open at the Keller Army Hospital, and I went after the job. I had got sober before this. My wife started leaving a lot of pamphlets around the house, or you're having a problem with alcohol, this and that, and you know, you could do something about it and whatever. And I went and I seen this guy in Highland Falls. I went downtown. I was a sick, sick puppy. And I went down to see this guy, and he took me to my first meeting 28 years ago. And I went back home after that meeting. I told my wife, I said, that's it. I'm not going to drink no more. I'll never have another drink. She said, yeah. You know, I told her that so many, many, many times that I'll never drink again. Well, I didn't. I just kept minding my own business, stayed sober, and went to a lot of meetings. And now, like I says, this job came open at the Keller Army Hospital as the head chef over there, so I went after the job. And I got the job. I just worked at that job for the past 18 years. I just retired yesterday. How I came up here on this mountain. From a guy, a lot of you people know, a guy by the name of Monty. I met Monty through the program. I went and got Monty out of a drying out place down in New Jersey, and he was coming up to this Mont Eagle every November and May. I said, what is this Mont Eagle and playing rook with the butterflies? What the hell is this? What are you talking about? What is this rook or ronk you're talking about? What is this? So he told me about Mont Eagle. So I said, maybe you'd like to come up to Mont Eagle. I come up to Mont Eagle 21 years ago. I've been coming for 20 years now up to Mont Eagle. Every May I'm here. When I got up here tonight and I says, I'm Wally and I'm an alcoholic, I'm not ashamed to say I'm an alcoholic no more. And you know something? Really, I was scared as hell to come up here tonight. I really was. I don't know why I was scared. I spoke to many, many groups of people about alcoholism. I was just so scared to be up here tonight because I sat down in there for 20 years and watched the speakers here. And one time they asked me to chair the meeting and I was sweating something terrible while I was up here chairing the meeting. I says, if I did this while I was just chairing, what am I going? I'll probably have a heart attack up here tonight. I was scared. And then I know these guys had all this stuff they were going to do to me, see? I knew that. I was scared. I don't know what they were going to do. I was really scared. But Juanita told me, she says, well, no matter what goes on, she said, just remember, she says, we all love you, and we're going to be watching you, whatever. But I don't know about really how much you people love me, because I want to tell you this. I don't think none of you love me, because I'll tell you what. I think I went to Jim Hawkins here about 3 years ago. I says, Jim, we can't get back to New York. I says, we don't have any money. And I think George Montgomery says, well, we'll have a collection for you boys. He just collected 34 cents and a button to get us back to New York. $0.34 and a button. And you tell me you love me. That's really some strong love, 34 cents and a button. We had a guy we used to bring with us, God bless him, his name was Frank Keller, and he died since we started coming up here. And he was going to sell Jim Hawkins cowboy boots so we can get enough money to go back home with. But George says he'll make a collection. And that's what you gave us, 34 cents in a button. But I could tell you something about some of the things I did, drinking and a puking. Unbelievable, unbelievable. What I done to some of my family, my wife, my daughter, and my son, while I was out there active drinking and not knowing what to do about life, until I went to my first AA meeting. And when that guy, Monty Perry, brought me down here 21 years ago, I really found out just what love and what life was all about. I haven't done too much in my life except get sober. And stay sober one day at a time. My life hasn't changed a whole lot since I joined this program because I've never went out and drank since. Just this last Tuesday, I celebrated 28 years in this program. And it's through all people like you that got me where I am today, sober at Mount Eagle with the people I love. And again, if I wasn't a drunk, I would have never found Mount Eagle. Did you ever think about that? I would have never found Mount Eagle if I wasn't a drunk. I would have never known Jim Hawkins. I would never know Bob Ross, Grady, Clarence Roberts. I would have never known any of you people. I'm glad I'm a drunk because I know what I can do about it. There's so many people out there that don't know what to do about it. I come up here, I get rejuvenated. When I leave this mountain on Sunday, we look forward to getting back here next May. It's a little sad when we have to leave here on Sunday to go down the mountain, but I do know I will be back here next May. I know I will be back here because I look forward to this and to seeing you people that I love so very, very much. And today, everything is just so great. Like I said, I just retired from the Federal Service yesterday where we were down in Sweetwater where we stay every year at this motel. I told Fred and Harold, I says, you know, I retired today. I was down there in the motel on sick leave. It was my last sick day leave to use up. And here I was sitting in the motel down there. That was my retirement day after working 34 years in the federal government. And since I went back to West Point, I never hid the fact that I was an alcoholic. I told everybody on West Point. I've made tapes for them down there on West Point about me being an alcoholic, that they've played to cadets and stuff like that, to high-ranking officials on West Point. It's never hurt me, promotion-wise, to get the top job in my outfit as being the head chef down there at Keller Army Hospital. And as long as I stay sober one day at a time, I'm going to have a damn good retirement life. I'm going to enjoy my life. And again, I just told you just a little bit about the end, really the end of my drinking. But I want to finish with saying, when I told you about being arrested for assault, robbery, and grand larceny, I went back to the courthouse many, many years to find out just exactly what the outcome was of this, because I really didn't know. I really didn't know. I was so screwed up in my mind that I didn't know nothing about nothing. But I had to find out what I was convicted of. And I went back there and I seen the district attorney. And he came out and he says, what is the problem? And I told him. He says, well, let me see what I could find out. So he came back out about 15 minutes later. And he said, Mr. Reddington, he says, we have nothing on you that you was convicted of assault, robbery, or grand larceny in this court in Orange County. He says, you were treated as a youthful offender from what I understand, and that is a closed case that there is no record of this. But when I see how crazy I was, when I went back to West Point and they say, were you ever arrested? I put down yes for assault, robbery, and grand larceny. That letter from the district attorney, I went back to the West Point officials, and that he had wrote that I was never convicted of assault, a robbery, and grand larceny in Orange County. So they took that off of my file. And, you know, through Alcoholics Anonymous, I went back to school. I got some college behind me. And everything has just been so, so great in my life. Some of the things I did, you know, to my kids, took things away from them during my drinking career. Today, my son, which I'll be visiting at the middle of this month, he is a Master Sergeant in the United States Air Force down in Charleston, South Carolina. And I'm going down there and see him. He don't hold nothing against me. We have a good relationship. He has two children, which I love very much. My daughter has a little girl, which I love very much. And just love is just so great, and it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when Jim Hawkins here asked me last year to be the speaker here, this, I had a whole year to think about this thing, Jim, let me tell you. And I really didn't think about it too much until we were coming up the mountain today. And I told Fred and Harold, I says, I'm scared to death. Harold told me, he says, just get up there and say the Serenity Prayer, everything will be fine. And just as Bruce, when he opened it up, and he says, a little silence, and we'll follow with the Serenity Prayer. Everything just came right out, just like Harold told me. Just get up there, and no problem. And it was no problem. Just like I says, I haven't done many things in my life except be a bum and get drunk. But to be sober today and to be up here, Amon Eagle, to speaking to you people about what it was like, part of my life, and what it's like today, life is nothing but beautiful. And I'll never forget you people, Jim, for asking me to speak here tonight. This is one of the biggest honors I've ever had in my life. I love y'all. Good luck and God bless you.